I'm Rebecca.
I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your source for the information and the inspiration to help you start, manage, and grow your business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And this is episode 217. And welcome back to the co-host desk, Rebecca.
Thank you. I'm so delighted to be back. How are you, Griff?
I'm okay. We miss you. And I know you're very busy in your new role. And someday on the podcast, we should actually talk about your role because it's very important here at eBay.
It is. For those who don't know, I run seller community and engagement here at eBay for the US market. We should go into it deeper someday, but basically I am lucky enough to head up the team that we produce the podcast and events like eBay Open and the seller check-ins, and we run the eBay for Business Facebook page, and we get to go out on the road and meet sellers at the seller meeting. So, you know, we're lucky enough to both advocate for sellers here inside of eBay and produce all these great ways that sellers can connect and know what's happening around eBay and to get involved with their seller community.
And I have the benefit of being here for quite a while, as everyone knows. And I've never known anyone who's been here for, I mean, it seems like forever, but you've been here for 2 years now, right?
Two and a half, but yeah.
Two and a half. I've never seen anyone who's been here for 2.5 years get torn into so many different directions at eBay. So I'm happy. I know that you love doing the work, but it's a huge workload. So I appreciate you taking some time to co-host for us this week while Brian's out.
Oh, I'm so happy when I have the chance to be here with you.
Yeah, it's fun. Not here in studio.
Yeah.
It's really great.
Yeah. Well, do we have a guest this week?
Well, I think you might remember we have two guests because last week we heard from one of our younger entrepreneurs. He was at the Seller Reseller Remix event. His name is Grant Heilman. Remember that young kid?
I do remember. He was really inspiring.
Well, yeah. This week, you may remember, we also talked with Grant's parents, Andy and Annette Heilman, and they're going to join us this week.
This was a great conversation. I remember it well. Their background, their story. Well, I don't want to, no spoilers, but it's a really interesting story.
And Andy's a lot of fun. I thought Grant was really kind of very business oriented and kind of serious. Mm-hmm. And then we met his dad, and his dad is, he's a joker. He's a comedian. So it's a really good contrast.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Hey, any news this week?
Yeah, actually, there is some news this week. So just in time for the holiday selling season, we have some really good news, actually. eBay and FedEx have worked together to bring lower rates on FedEx home delivery to sellers, and it's just in time for that peak season. So sellers can now enjoy deeper discounts, making home delivery one of the most cost-competitive services in the space, and it's offering sellers even more options to ship this holiday season. These new lower FedEx home delivery rates are now fully incorporated into the eBay shipping calculator, and you can find your shipping calculator at https://ebay.com/SHP, like short for shipping, /calculator. So that's ebay.com/SHP/calculator.
Yeah, and we'll put that link in the summary overview for episode 217.
Definitely. And the calculator, the way that it works is you just enter your package details there and compare the lower FedEx home delivery rates with the other carrier rate options.
Yeah, and I think it's underutilized. So we're going to make sure that you always have that link. If you want to know what's going to be the best services to provide to your buyers, you should check it out. You might discover some cheaper shipping options for your buyers and, of course, for you as well. That's ebay.com/SHP/calculator. Rebecca, while you and I were recording guests at the Seller Remix event in Las Vegas last month, we met a family of sellers, and last week we heard from the son of that family, Grant Heilman, and this week we're going to meet Grant's parents and learn a little bit more about the family that sells together. With us now are Andy and Annette Heilman, and they are the parents of Grant Heilman, who stunned us all with his business acumen and his eloquence telling his story of starting on your accounts when he was 15. His card actually says entrepreneur. I'm assuming it comes from you guys.
I think it does.
Yeah. I've been in the business for 45 years and reselling for 45 years.
You sell
antique model trains and antique toys.
Tell us about your history in the business.
Yeah, so my parents are German immigrants, and when my mom came to the country, she wasn't allowed to work. And so she wanted to be functional and have something to, you know, participate in the economy. And she fell in love with antiques and started selling antiques. And the joke in the industry was that my mom was selling antiques and then I dropped out and started selling right beside her, you know, because I was literally born into the business. Mm-hmm. And I loved it, just absolutely loved it. So at a very young age, I migrated towards toys, made sense. And I played with the old Lionel trains from 1910 when the other kids may have had the newer stuff, you know. And so that was how it all started. And it became a hobby, always a hobby. And we sold to fund the hobby. That was the primary. And my taste got more and more expensive in the trains I was buying. And so I needed to sell more to fund that hobby. And now I run live steam trains, which are the most expensive. They're trains that run on actual steam.
Toy trains.
Toy trains. They're
model- with a little boiler inside. Yeah. And you've got to shove a little tiny pieces of coal.
Coal. I either fire coal, alcohol, or butane.
Oh, and these don't sound dangerous at all.
Enormous table setups with like trees and caves.
Outside.
And water.
You run them outside.
Yeah, you can't. These things.
I'm learning, okay.
I always say it's equal to a stick of dynamite, to give you an idea.
Right.
You know, these are small. You can't ride them. Mm. You know, they're smaller than that.
Okay.
But they're fully, and I call them fire-breathing dragons. You know, they're basically, they come alive, and they all have a unique sense to each engine. It's completely different than the next engine.
Have you ever had a disaster with one of these?
I've had a meltdown, but never an explosion.
Meltdown, tell us.
So a meltdown is, I use the wrong fuel. You use alcohol, and I used methanol, and methanol burns at a different rate, and the engine was completely engulfed in flames running down the tracks.
Oh my gosh, please tell me you got that on video.
Yeah, it was before iPhone. So no, unfortunately not. Mentally, I have it, and it's something that you never want to see again when engine costs so much money.
Did it literally melt down this engine?
Yeah. So all the non-functioning part, the brass boiler was fine, but the wheels, the detail parts, the anything that was functioning broke.
Did you keep it as a reminder?
No, I did get rid of it. It's always been a memento, but no, I did sell it finally.
Annette, were you seeing this when this happened?
Oh, I remember when that happened. Didn't it fall in the water too?
Yeah. It put itself out.
It's like a mini disaster movie.
It was a big disaster.
Wow.
Watch a grown man cry.
So, Annette, you didn't grow up in the business,
no.
But have you always sold together? What's your role?
We got married when we were 21, and when we needed extra money, and he was still in college, so we were selling. And we started out on eBay as soon as it really kind of came out.
In the early days.
Yeah. And I really loved eBay. We were doing it on the side, and we were just trying to make some extra money, you know, as young people, and it was great. And then I fell in love with eBay. And sold a lot and made it my business. And in the late 90s, early 2000s, I actually had a couple people working for me. I was doing it full time.
Wow.
And had two employees coming and, you know, taking photos and so forth. And it was a very good business. I enjoyed it very much. I was home and I thought it would be an ideal business if I had a family, that I could be home and not have to be away.
Right.
That was kind of the goal. But in the years, Andy's career kind of took off and life happens and we ended up moving and going all over. And so I was in business, out of it, buying more than selling. And in 2020, we took the leap and we went full-time back into eBay.
Okay.
And that happened due to a job loss during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Right.
We had kind of a rough situation where, you want to explain what happened?
Yeah, basically we took lemons and made lemonade out of it.
And I love that when that happens.
And what it happened was, I mean, it was the worst scenario it could possibly, this is our backstory, the grip that caused everything to happen. We were loading up a truck for a transfer. We're actually moving.
Sold
the house, and we get a call and say, we don't no longer need you anymore. Would have been nicer prior to selling the house, but after selling the house, we were forced. We couldn't buy another house because I didn't have a job.
Yeah.
Didn't have a mortgage. Couldn't get a mortgage.
Right.
So what we did was we changed our lives completely by downsizing, getting a smaller house. We used to live in a mansion, and we don't need a mansion. We bought a smaller house and then took half of those assets and then embedded that into the business and built a warehouse on the property. We have basically a committed brick, you know, structure that's going to be dedicated towards the business. And now we have a very substantial inventory. We have a $500,000 inventory in a warehouse, and we have a great throughput, right. And we're selling great, and everything's wonderful.
Now. Have you moved back into a mansion?
No.
We bought this other home, you know, but because of the job loss, we weren't able to get a mortgage.
Yeah.
So we had to buy it in cash.
And then when we built the building, we built a 40 by 60 metal building on the property, and that's where we work.
Yeah.
And we paid for that also. So everything's paid for, which is a good thing. Yeah.
Where are we with this? What state do you live in?
North Carolina.
And where in North Carolina?
Greensboro.
Right, just my, okay, yeah.
And we tell everyone that, you know, life changed, but for the better.
Yes.
I mean, I see my kids, I get to, you met Grant, he's part of the business,
yeah.
And it's, our life has changed for the better. I can't stress that enough.
Well, that's what happened, but at the moment when the catastrophe...
It was horrifying.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely... And my kids actually sat us down and said, are we poor now? Is this the end, you know?
Oh, yeah, right.
And, I mean, they went to private school. I mean, yeah. We lived life at the highest level.
They had a really good life.
And so we had to change that. We used to have a swimming pool. We used to have, you know, luxuries beyond belief, Porsches, and, you know, just...
We decided to make a change.
Yeah.
I felt it was better to be simpler.
Yeah.
And just kind of invest in us and bet on us. Can we do this? Can we make our own business where we can go where we want, see what we want to do, but also build our own business that can support us?
Right.
And that's what we started doing 2 years ago.
And it wasn't like we were starting at zero because we had the background. We knew what to do. We just had to accelerate.
Right.
We had to accelerate.
Can I ask what it is that you did before this?
Oh, I was a procurement director for a billion-dollar electronics company.
Interesting.
Well, they lost a lot when they lost you. That was a bad decision.
Yeah, and we, you know, I mean, the hardest thing was I bled for the company every given day, and we went around the world for the company, and just really I gave my heart and soul, and that was getting the kick in the teeth. That was the hardest part to overcome. They actually invited me to come back, and I wouldn't come back.
Good.
Because I don't want to do this again.
Right.
I mean, it's like, I just got off that train. I'm not getting back on.
Right. As we talked with your son. Tell us a little bit about how it became a family business and bringing your kids into the business.
So there's a yin and yang. You want to? Okay. So my son... It's great. We have a shared passion on the toy side. He's more in the, I would say, the collectibles on the memorabilia and the sports cards. I don't get that. I sold my rookie Mickey Mantle and bought a brand new car from that sale of that, you know, card. I get that part, but I don't get the hobby today. The hobby today is completely different.
It is, isn't it?
There's a multitude of companies. You can pick LeBron James out of a box and get $2.3 million in one day.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just beyond. It's like, I call it kids gambling. That's what I call it.
Kids gambling.
And,
I love that.
Well, because he buys, you know, he's a young man and he buys these boxes that are $500 and you're hoping that something's inside it. Otherwise, you lose.
Right.
You
know?
So that's why I call it the gambling part.
And Grant knows how you feel about that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because he's listening right now.
Right. Talking.
So then our daughter, she understands the value of a used item that you can actually repurpose and use an item over again. She loves that portion of it. Mm-hmm. But she also equates what we do to hoarding. You know, that all this stuff, because it, you know, piles up, is scary and intimidates her as far as,
yes.
Oh my gosh, my parents are hoarders. You know, it's like,
I got to call Marie Kondo right away.
That happened because of our move. We just didn't have the space. So when we made the transitional move, we had a rental home that was only 1,200 square feet. And once we started back into eBay full time, I mean, literally packing and shipping on the stove and the counters in the kitchen, because we were going to be moving again into the home we were buying. So she saw all of the inventory just kind of piling up and inside the house. And I'm sure, you know, it wasn't a place she wanted to bring friends over to see.
Well, now, is she older or younger than
Grace? She's 2 years older than Grant.
Right.
And her name is Grace.
Is she involved in buying and selling at all?
No, not too much.
But she has done some.
Yeah. She's very knowledgeable, but she just hasn't made that commitment. Mm-hmm. She's very helpful. She'll do some packing and shipping.
Mm-hmm.
And she, in fact, while we're gone, she'll ship out some things for us. She understands the business and how to do it. And her boyfriend actually have sold some things on eBay, but not full time or anything like that.
Yeah.
But she's dabbled in it.
And she's listening right now.
Right. Yeah.
So,
listening.
So Grace, thank you. It's Grace, right? Yes.
Yeah,
Grace, thank you so much for helping out. Right.
We do hear that story so often. So I definitely have piles in my corners. It's where I'm like, no, that's mommy's eBay pile. But making that leap into the warehouse and, you know, moving the business out of your home into a structure, really creating kind of that separation. Have you found that that really has made you approach the business side of it as more of a structured business and less of a like side gig or hobby?
Yeah, no, our dog, we say, we're going to work. And his ears perk up and he's so excited because our 5-minute commute to our warehouse, loves it because it's a new place. He goes over and he has his pillow there and he's at work. And then we're going home and then he perks up and goes.
What's the distance between house?
Oh, it's only like 25 feet.
Okay. So, I mean, but to a dog, it's another world.
Right. Yeah. It's outside. Stretch your leg. He loves it.
But to your point, that's exactly right. We would say that there's a clean delineation between life balance, you know, and everything now because we have the two buildings. Mm-hmm.
It really is helpful, especially like we try to end around 5 o'clock each day, which is a nice normal time to end,
right,
as opposed to working till 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night. And we'll wrap it up. I mean, on a long day, we might be there till maybe 6 or 6:30 if something's really happening in the business. But and then we go home and it's kind of closed off.
Yeah.
You know, we do have our cell phones on us and of course we're checking. You hear the cha-chings.
And they know where to find us, you know, if there's something, you know, hey, I'm starving, I want to eat now. You know, it's like,
So talk to us a little bit about your sourcing. You don't have to give away secrets or anything.
We're very open about that and transitional. On our YouTube, that's what we want. I want to teach the fishermen to fish. You know, that's the ultimate goal. Our YouTube is very educational, too educational probably, but it's very educational. And the point we're trying to show is that I have a program. I said there's life outside of Goodwill, that everyone thinks that 100% of your material has to come from Goodwill. We don't buy from Goodwill at all.
Not too much.
We only buy large collections at a time, and then we break up those collections. And so the collections are either Barbies one day, we'll buy a Barbie collection, and we'll be selling Barbies for the next month. And then we switch over and we're buying a train collection, then we're selling trains for the next month. The collections rotate, but they're usually very similar, bonded together because we're buying a big collection at one time.
Right, and then I specialize more in China, crystal, silver, collectibles, and so forth. And we had a lead, actually, from someone we knew contacted us. And he said, you know, I've got someone, I know you sell this. And
it's good crossover.
They have all this Waterford crystal, but it's a lot of stuff. Is it something you're interested in? And of course I was.
Yeah.
So they sent me a list. I went through it and I made my offer and sent it to him. And she said, that's the best offer I've gotten from anybody. Yeah, I'll take it. So, and then we went and loaded up our van and sold the items that way too. So we try to buy in bigger bulk, you know, if possible. And actually, individual collectors, and they're happy with that. They really want you to take all their items. They don't want to have lots of people coming through their homes and so forth.
Yeah. We call it the white glove treatment, that we go in and we take everything so that they don't have to worry about, how do I get rid of this? I'll take it all. I'll just buy it all. And you know, they don't have to worry about that. Been to California 4 times in 1 year driving, because we have to drive and to buy a collection and bring it back. And that's how far I'm willing to go to buy that right collection.
You heard it here, by the way, if you have a collection. Just call Andy and Annette.
Andy, I think you mentioned your YouTube channel, but Annette, I actually want to ask you, so you've started doing TikTok, which, of course, you know, it's kind of top of mind for a lot of us who work in the social media industry, and I'm sure it's an important marketing channel for you. How's that been, like, the foray into...
I like TikTok. I feel like I have a lot of followers that are actual resellers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not making any money on it or anything like that. You know, I mean, it's more of a fun social way. And I was hoping to connect and teach. Mm-hmm. But I'll put things out there and I get a lot of positive feedback, you know, from them. They're happy to connect. They never knew about that. I'll do some videos on bolos. Actually, I'll put Andy, my son Grant, I've got him on a few of them. And, and try and show people, be on the lookout for this or that. And it's going really good, the response.
And that's more natural, I would say, at it. She just, everyone feels that she's not scripting something, she's just telling you something. And where I feel awkward, I have a hard time with
that. Wait, you have a hard time with this?
I have a really hard time with it. Extremely hard.
I would have guessed that you had a performance back.
You're an in-person kind of guy.
Yeah. You turn on the camera and I'm like...
Really? Yeah. So, I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah.
Is connecting with the seller community important for you and for growing
Absolutely.
Your business?
Absolutely. Yeah. I actually met Teresa, and she was telling me about this Boss Reseller Remix and told her about how we had, you know, gotten full time into this. Our family was into it. I mentioned Grant. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, you need to make the trip and come out to Vegas and bring him. Because there's so much to learn and to grow, and the connections you make with other people, they're really invaluable. I mean, it's really very helpful. It seems like you learn something from everyone you meet, and I love that. I want to learn. I want to share, and I want a nice community, and I can see that we found it.
Yeah, these are an incredible group of people here that are here for
this. Really, they're sensational.
And so, like, such a diverse way that they got into business, their reasons, their different categories. It's just really interesting, the mixture of sellers here.
What I'm looking for out of this is a little bit different than the average person out there, I would say. And that's what I'm trying to move from a $350,000 business to a $1 million business. Mm-hmm. So how do we scale up to the next level? And I call it reselling 2.0. Mm-hmm. Really, how do you take this, you know, because I built businesses before in the billions of dollars. I know what to do. I know how to do it. Mm-hmm. It's just, how do you do it on it's a one-off item. Every item we're selling is one-off.
Right.
There's only us two.
Right.
How do you do that scaling without resources, without tools that you can utilize? I used to offshore things. Well, you could offshore your VAs, you know, you could do that. But I want to try to take this in a more systematic approach and duplicate it to a larger scale without going into a corporate environment. You know what I mean? Still make it mom and pop, but mom and pop at a bigger level.
I love that you're literally mom and pop.
Yeah, we literally are mom and pop. So we just got to have more kids.
So now,
like farmers.
Time's wasting.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so when we were talking with Grant, your son, we heard that you go to the same trade shows, and Griff asked, do you guys compete to see who has a better day? And so we need to know the answer from your side.
There's a lot of competition there, a lot of competition, because he is 90s toys and more modern toys, mm-hmm. and I'm old toys. Mm-hmm.
And his cards. He has his cards.
Yeah. Well, so
cards.
The cards, he has an unfair advantage.
You know, he crushes it a lot of times.
$100 cards. Cards fly off the shelf, you know. $100 toy, it's got to be the exact toy that the person's been looking for. It's got to be, you got to have that right item. And I think density, just the cards, you can get more in a smaller space, and he has a better chance of selling, you know. I'll just say that. And the industry's hotter, I would say.
Right at the moment, yes.
I'm definitely a dinosaur. When you go to a toy show, there's two guys. There's me and another guy we're the only ones with pre-war toys. Mm-hmm. And everyone comes up and said, oh, you got the most amazing stuff, but they don't buy it. It's a museum. They just want to look at it. So I would
charge admission into the booth.
Right? Like tour of the warehouse, new revenue stream.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we have talked about that, hosting parties. There was a guy in Detroit. He was the largest toy collection in the world. He actually bought Lionel Trains because he wanted to grow the hobby so bad. And he had a warehouse where he could run his trains and have a party. You could have a big party like this and run these trains. Sold out all the time. He had a car collection. He had a train collection. And so part of the pull for the renting the facility was that. You know? And that was a great idea. So, yeah, we have kicked around that idea. The one thing I was going to say, though, you know, the business side of selling is not hard for us. But the social side of the business is very hard for us. We're both, you know.
You mean the social media.
Social media side. Growing that is so important nowadays, mm-hmm. in growing that and creating your audience. Because, you know, through eBay, it's kind of cold. It's one-sided. It's leaving, but you don't know your customer. I want to know my customer. I want to know exactly who that customer is. I know demographics. I can tell you they're 77 years old is the average age for a train guy. So I know I don't have much longer to sell to this group because they're dying off, unfortunately. And
there's an estate sale.
Yeah.
That's true. And there are some younger people getting into it.
But it is a dying hobby. Unfortunately, it is a dying hobby. And so I have to look at what's the next thing for us? And so we are thinking about that, moving towards that. But the social media aspect is the hardest part that we're figuring out, and we are still figuring it out.
I think in the future, we're probably going to end up working for Grant.
Yeah, that's true.
If you want to know the truth. True. Because I think he's got it figured out.
I could just see the future conversations. Dad, let's talk about your productivity. A little down this
one. He's just going to give us a check.
So the last thing that we've been asking is, what's your one piece of advice for another eBay seller?
The niche is very important. I think you have to build off of one item. I stress that with everyone. We have our bread and butter sales every single day because of the trains. Now, Annette sold just yesterday or today a China set for a lot of money, and those fill in the blanks, but you need that bread and butter every single day. And you have to figure out what that bread and butter is for you. Everyone's different. Everyone's got a different reason. I'm kind of known in the industry because I've been doing it for so long, and I have those contacts already pre-built. So you have to figure out what those, you know, talents you have that you can, you know, grow out of.
And Annette?
I agree. But also, I also think that if you're just getting started out, don't be afraid. Just try. I mean, you know, in the beginning, I kind of felt like just list as much as the things that you find as you can. It's kind of like throwing spaghetti on the wall. If you keep doing it, it's going to stick pretty soon. And
there'll be quite a mess on the floor.
That's true. But you will get some sales. Yeah. And in the beginning, you need the sales, you need the feedback, and you need to build that good rapport with customers so that you have really good feedback. I think that's very, very important, and that you're taking care of the customers. When I first started, people that I would meet with, they really didn't care about shipping so much. They looked at it as more of, I've sold it, let's get it out of here. And I think that's a very, very important part that a lot of people make mistakes on, that you need to care about the whole process of your business, because when your customer receives your item, it's the very first sign that they see of you and your business. So I try really hard to make sure that everything looks very nice, is wrapped properly, and I always advertise with eBay on the box, whether it's the tissue or on the outside and so forth, so they have a really good positive experience and want to come back and shop from us.
We are creating that brand and image, and we are trying to, and that's amazing in packing. I mean, amazing. She gets more compliments for the actual packing than the item that's inside.
I think that comes from a lot of buyers who get really frustrated with a long series of packing jobs that are less than professional. It happens to me. I buy a lot, and
it's a turnoff. I've received some things that were awful, and I wouldn't shop from them again, ever.
I want to thank you both, Andy and Annette, for stopping by and talking to us. And again, thank you for producing a young entrepreneur.
Yeah.
If you could get to work producing more of them, we'd be very glad. The business is called Surplus 4 Business, and that's Surplus, the number 4, and then Business.
LLC.
And I will post links in this episode summary overview for all of your social channels as well, so people can follow you as well. And continued success to you both.
Thank you so much. And we appreciate you having us here today, Rebecca.
Well, thank you so much for giving us your time. We really appreciate it. This has been a great conversation.
Thank you. Awesome. We really appreciate it.
Enjoy the rest of the event.
We will.
Thanks.
You got questions?
Well, we got answers. So how lucky can you be? Would you read this first question, Rebecca?
Oh, absolutely. This is my favorite part. Okay. eBay seller Andrew sent the following to podcast@ebay.com. Andrew says, you don't have to use the bulk label flow to combine shipping, quote unquote. You can just pack your box, buy the label on one of the uncharted sales, and then paste the tracking number onto the additional orders and mark them as shipped. I sell retail arbitrage items and commonly find people have ordered 2 or 3 items back to back. It works out nicely for me because they don't take advantage of my multi-discount and I have free shipping where the cost is figured into the total price. So they buy multiple items at full price and pay the shipping multiple times, and I get to ship it all at a lower cost per unit. Is that a hack? That sounds like a hack.
It's kind of a hack, but it's actually a legal hack, and it's a really good one because, as Andrew has discovered, this method for combining shipping will work. And in fact, I got to say, a lot of sellers rely on it. I've used it in the past, but the key here, as Andrew mentioned, is free shipping. When you fold the shipping cost into an item price, and I have to, let's acknowledge right up front, that's not always possible for all sellers. That will accomplish two things. It will make it easier for a buyer to determine which item to purchase when that same item is offered by two or more sellers, and it's a competition issue. And in Andrew's case, how many he's selling.
I can also see how Andrew's tip provides the option for the seller to control shipping costs for multiple purchases by the same buyer.
Yeah, it can. And in fact, once shipping costs are taken off the table, aka free shipping, and we know it's not free, you're folding it into the item price. But once you're taking it off the table, it's actually possible for a seller to save money on free shipping. However, no matter how a seller is funding the shipping costs, whether there's free or buyer paid, they may need to adapt shipping carrier, class of service, and parcel dimensions if they're going to consolidate any of those purchases into a single package. And that's obvious. But for Andrew, it works because when it's free shipping and you've taken the shipping thing off the table, you don't have to put them in one package if you don't want to. You can, but this gives the option for the seller to decide, hey, how am I going to save money on shipping or maybe even make some money on shipping, which is perfectly okay. It's perfectly okay to do it.
I think the upshot here is do whatever it takes to avoid pre- and post-payment negotiations on shipping costs with a potential or an existing buyer.
Yeah, that's right, Rebecca. Think about it. On what online retail site is it possible or necessary for a buyer and a seller to negotiate shipping, either pre- or post-payment? Just eBay.
I mean, I've experimented with this myself, and I always come back to free shipping. Yeah. You know, I think people like one price, right?
They do. And again, depending on what you're selling and what your margins are, if you can do this, you can end up, like I said, not only saving money on shipping because you're still having to pay for the shipping label,
right,
even if it says free shipping.
Yeah.
But under the right circumstances, you can make a little bit of profit. And again, let me reiterate, there's nothing wrong with that. You can also, if you like, return it to the buyer in the form of a partial refund.
Right.
You don't have to do that, though.
Shipping is a cost of shopping.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. So if you have a tip of your own for handling multiple purchases and shipping, share it with your fellow sellers by calling it in at 888-723-4630 or email it to us at podcast@ebay.com.
Yeah, because we love seller tips.
Yes, we do.
Now, our next email is from a new eBay seller, Jesse, with a particularly interesting and not uncommon problem. She writes, "Hi, gang. I'm a new seller on eBay focusing on consignment. I thought I'd be wildly successful by now, but I've hit a roadblock. I have a starter store subscription, but I'm still limited to listing and selling 10 items per month. What's worse, multiple quantities available on listings and listings that renew automatically count toward the limit. As it stands now, out of the 250 included in my subscription, I'll only be able to list a couple of new items in November. Do you have any advice on how and when this limit will increase? I've tried asking for a limit increase, but the request was denied. I love the podcast. Thanks for all your help. Jesse." And Jesse's eBay store is Eva_and_Easterlies.
We hear this sometimes, right?
Yeah.
These limits. Now, they are in place because it's safer for new sellers. It's safer for buyers. There's a good reason why there are limits. But I understand that, you know, they can be a little bit of a head scratcher,
yeah,
for new sellers.
Yeah.
So I searched up Jesse's user ID. And Jesse, I noticed that you have only had 4 sales since August. Like, respect. I'm not sure I've had many more. But, you know, that may be the issue with your limits not increasing, right?
It is actually definitely the issue. Seller limits are increased for a new seller over time as that new seller completes more and more successful transactions. The more transactions you complete, the sooner limits start to increase. And when they increase, they actually increase quite a bit.
So we call that sales velocity. And it's super important for new sellers looking to list more and more inventory on eBay. You have to kind of build up a track record.
Yeah. And it is so important that it's what we're going to focus on here. That's why I always advise new sellers to put their laser focus on the volume of their sales, not the prices of each individual listing. And Jesse, the best way to accomplish this is for you as a new seller to start out listing, I call it inventory that you're not invested in. You know, it's personal stuff or it's household merchandise. I'm not sure I'd be taking things on consignment this early in your game. If you focus on what's like around your house, looking for inventory in which you have little or no financial or even emotional investment, you're going to focus on just getting those things sold, and you're going to list them with low starting bids for auctions or competitive prices for any fixed price items.
So I took this strategy as well when I started really focusing on selling on eBay. And you can still sell stuff that are in the category that you're trying to eventually, you know, build your business in. There's ways to do this. I think the point is understanding what your goal is as a new eBay seller. It's not about generating a ton of revenue, not immediately. It's about building up that velocity, building up that track record that I mentioned, and getting those sales limits lifted. It's not like list your thing for a penny. You know, you still want to be a little bit reasonable. But what you do want to do is have a competitive price so that you get as many sales as possible right away. That will help with your limits.
At this point, Jesse, you're not even close to reaching your sales limit, which is 10. If you've only sold 4 listings since August, those were 1, 2, 3 months, August, September, October. We won't even count November, where you could have sold 30 items by now. But you have to be laser focused on the sale and making sure that when you list something, it's not going to last over a month, because then it does count against next month's. And I tell you, every successful sale that you end up making at this point is going to get those limits increased much quicker.
Look, everyone has stuff in their home that they want to get rid of, right?
Oh, yeah. In fact, a study eBay did a few years ago, in fact, it might have been more than a few years ago, discovered that the average household has about, on average, $2,500 in potential value in unnecessary, unused, or unwanted items just hanging around the house.
So in addition to thinking about what you want to sell and boosting that velocity, it's, you know, when is the right time to subscribe to a store? So Jesse, I mean, you may have subscribed too soon in your eBay selling journey. Griff, can Jesse cancel their subscription?
Yeah, Jesse can and probably should cancel that. I wouldn't advise even a starter store to any new seller until their limits are increased above the free listing allotment of 250 listings.
Those sales before a store, so long as they're in the same account, they count towards those limits even after you open a store.
Yeah. The problem is that Jesse has discovered, hey, I get 250 free listings. I can't utilize them.
Right.
Jesse's spending money for a store and not being able to take advantage of the benefits. It's going to be better if they cancel the store subscription.
Mm-hmm.
And then later in the future, Jesse can resubscribe to a store once limits are up and velocity is kind of regular, and that's how that would work.
And also remember that having any listing sit for a month or longer with no sale is going to hinder reaching your goal of more sales and those higher limits.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Okay, so Jesse, thank you for going on this journey with us. If you can successfully sell and ship 10 items in a month, I'm really sure that your listing limit will increase soon afterwards. We'd love to know. Give it a try. Come back and let us know. Call us again at 888-723-4630.
Or send it to podcast@ebay.com.
Totally.
Coincidentally, you should mention our voice line, because our next question was called into that line at 888-723-4630. Let's listen.
Hello. I sent something out via regular USPS first class, and it had tracking on it because I bought the label from eBay. And the last leg of it, the delivery, never got scanned. So the customer actually did receive the product, and I spent a lot of time chasing my tail at the local post office, calling the 800 number, et cetera, et cetera. And I finally reached out to the customer and said, I am, you know, escalating this. I'm so sorry it hasn't gotten to you. And she said, no, I've received it. But there's no way for us to mark that as received. The post office can't do it. She would have to go do it. And I believe that she lives in Canada. So I think this went through a freight forwarder. So if you could address that on your podcast, that would be great. My name's Kimberly. Thanks in advance for your time. Have a great day.
Kimberly, as long as the buyers receive the item, there's nothing you need to do at this point. You can just move on to the next transaction.
But, you know, I am curious about the freight forwarding part of this. We've seen some conversation in the online community about this recently. So how does freight forwarding work?
We don't know for sure, and I don't think Kimberly knows for sure that's what's in play here. But a freight forwarder is a company that works on behalf of buyers and can get cheaper costs for, say, international shipping if they're the address and purchaser of record. So you may find that you have a buyer, say, in Japan, And you don't know that they're necessarily located in Japan because the address of the buyer shows as somewhere in the United States, and shipping is pretty relatively inexpensive. That is all you're required to do is just to get that package to whatever the address of record. And I know a lot of sellers spend a lot of time then thinking about the ramifications of, well, what if this is going on to another, you know, somewhere else? And the thing is, it's not your risk. All you have to do is sell to and ship to the buyer of record. What happens to the item after that is not your problem. If the item shows as delivered, and then some strange buyer comes and starts saying, hey, I never received my package, you just tell them, you're not the buyer of record. I'm sorry. You'll have to deal with that freight company. It's their responsibility. So that's how that works.
What about returns?
The same thing. The buyer would have to return it to the freight forwarder, and then the freight forwarder would file for a return.
Ah.
The freight forwarder becomes the buyer of record as far as eBay and the seller is concerned.
Got it. Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I just saw a conversation about this on one of the Facebook groups one of the sellers runs. There was a seller who was concerned about freight forwarding and to Japan, as you said. And a whole bunch of other sellers said that they love sending stuff to this particular Japanese freight forwarding service, that they're a great buyer. They always leave positive feedback, that it's just a really seamless thing. So it's just interesting that this came up on the podcast today.
Yeah, I thought it'd be a good opportunity to explain what it was in case someone was thinking, I don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah. Kimberly, what I know is that if the buyer says that she received the parcel, neither you or the buyer needs to alert eBay that the item arrived.
It's, exactly.
As long as the buyer doesn't open an item not received case and tracking shows an acceptance scan or a transit scan, you can stop worrying about the transaction. It's done.
Yeah, it's done. You can, like I said, move on to the next transaction and make more sales. We have another question that was called into our voice line. Again, that number, 888-723-4630. And this is from eBay seller Chuck.
I was curious whether eBay has changed their fee structure for selling vehicles on eBay Motors. I was told now that maybe there's just a listing fee and there's no fee at the end of the sale. I've sold some used vehicles in the past on eBay and I did get charged a fee. I just wondered if that had changed. My name is Chuck Updike. My eBay username is CU2000. Thank you.
Chuck, this is a great question. You can always find this type of information on the help and contact pages. You just click on the link at the top of any eBay page on the website and enter in the keywords that relate to the information you seek. For example, eBay Motors fees will work.
Yeah.
It's a long URL to get straight to that page. We'll put it in the show notes, but just search on eBay Motors fees on the site. So in brief, the fees charged to you for selling a vehicle depend on whether you are a low or a high volume seller.
Yeah. If you list up to 6 vehicles in a calendar year, Chuck, anywhere from January 1st to December 31st, you're going to be considered a low volume seller. And that's a whole other fee schedule. If you list 7 or more vehicles in a calendar year, then you're going to be considered a high volume seller, like a car dealer. And each time you submit a vehicle listing or relist a vehicle, it counts as one listing. And once you become a high volume seller, that's a status you keep permanently year after year.
And rather than rattling off a long list of the various fee packages for low and high volume sellers, I encourage you to just go directly to that page yourself to see them firsthand.
Yeah, and it's really easy. Just click on the help and contact link. It's there at the top of most every eBay page, and then enter keywords that relate to the information you're looking for. For example, in this case, if you typed eBay Motors fees, it's going to show up. That's it. That's how it works.
And speaking of that's it for questions for this episode. But if you have a question out there, you can always call us at 888-723-4630.
That's 888-723-4630. You can call that number any time of day, any day of the week. Then you can leave a question or comment and be sure to leave your name and email address and shipping address so we can send you some swag.
Swag.
And if your question's appropriate, we'll put it on the air.
If you're not a call on the phone kind of person, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
And now, as we do every week, it's time for your 3-point podcast checklist.
Number one, check the announcement board at ebay.com/announcements for up-to-date seller news every day.
Number two, don't overlook one of the best information resources on eBay. No, it's not just the podcast, although we appreciate that you tune in or download. It's the help and contact pages, and that link on the top of any eBay page should be your first go-to. whenever you have a question about selling or buying on eBay.
And number three, if you need to review anything on this episode, it's really easy. Check the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard and to find the links that we reference during the episode. Ooh, can I mention a number four, Griff?
What's number four?
Check out our brand new other sister podcast, the Seller Spotlight Podcast, and we'll put a link for that also into the show notes.
Yes, Georgia and team. And that we're getting ready to release episode three, I think, the week that this goes live. So you'll want to go check out the new episode.
Absolutely. There's super inspiring stories.
On our next episode of the eBay for Business podcast, we'll meet up with two sellers here on campus and discover why they made the trip to San Jose.
And we'd like to thank our guests again this week, Andy and Annette Heilman of Surplus for Business here on eBay.
The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.